back to WEEM Weekly. I'm Callie Ox here, and I'm joined by
Dr. Michael Pio.
Could you just give a brief description of what you do throughout the school and like what your position is?
Yeah, I serve as our assistant principal. And with that, I'm in charge of all of our state testing. I do all of our 504 plans. I'm in charge of our instruction and curriculum. And then I oversee staff and student concerns as well.
So obviously with a new school year comes new policies, new rules. There's two big ones that everybody's aware of, the attendance policy and then obviously the bell-to-bell phone rules. So starting with the attendance policy, can you explain what changed from last year, how the school expects to see a change within students in the learning environment?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's definitely a big change for our students. I mean, when we're going from 9 absences a semester down to 5, realistically, we had to match what the state is expecting out of schools. So with the new school accountability model that came out this year, we're going back to schools being rated A through F. It's not a new concept, but one of the factors that they put in there is attendance. So all schools in the state are now expected to have students attend at the 96% rate. So if you look at 96 percentile, that gives you 10 days, which brought it from 9 down to 5. So that's where those numbers came from. It wasn't something that we just set out and said, hey, you know what, let's make our attendance tougher on kids. I get it. Things come up. But at the same time, if the state's going to mandate that we're expected to have students there 96% of the time, because after 96 percentile, all studies show that that's when student attendance starts to have negatively impact their learning. So that's where that state got the 96 percentile from national research on that topic. So we had to obviously change our policy to match that as well.
Another thing that kind of moves in with the attendance policy, in my opinion, that kind of sweetens the deal on not missing as much, is the whole not being able to take or being able to skip out on certain finals. Could you kind of explain that?
Absolutely. So we knew there'd be a change. And this goes back to, I guess, something that I experienced when I was a student as well as some other staff members. For me, there was always an incentive. There was an attendance incentive when I was in school. Granted, I went to a different school, but ours was if you missed 3 or fewer days and had a B or higher, you didn't have to take the finals. So we wanted to kind of mirror something where kids got an incentive. Hey, you're here. What can we do to help some of those kids that maybe were at 7 or 8 absences? Can we get them here to 5 or fewer? So that's where we kind of put a little attendance incentive in there. So like if you do miss 5 or fewer days and have a C or higher in your classes, you do not have to take the finals. Students can still have the choice if they want to, but it won't negatively impact them. So we felt like, if we're going to ask more, we want to be able to reward some of our students too for doing the right thing and being at school and being good students.
Does that rule apply to every class, or is it only like you can only choose one class where you're not taking the final?
No, that applies to every single class you're in. And just like you can meet the attendance threshold for maybe 5 of the classes, maybe 2 of them, you had too many appointments or something.
Yeah.
And you'd have to take the finals in those, but you could still get it for the other ones.
How about AP classes? Does it also apply for that?
Or it would apply for all. The only ones it would not apply to would be your dual credit classes, mm-hmm. because the universities that we're tied to supersede our rules. So any dual credit courses would be, they would not be fall subject to that. So sorry for you guys out there taking your dual credit courses. I think it's awesome you guys are pushing yourselves. But unfortunately, there are university policies that supersede ours a little bit in that.
Yeah. So obviously the second big one is the bell-to-bell phone policy. Could you elaborate on how the school and obviously the state, because it's a state law, how they think it's going to affect the learning and how they want to see the change coming in?
So obviously this was a big state change policy that was coming through. And every school had to set their own policy on what it looked like. So every district in the state has to set a bell-to-bell cell phone policy, limiting the amount of time students are on phones. Some are completely off and away. Some are out of their lockers. You know, we chose to, our school board chose to, often in a secure location, which can be a backpack, whatever it might be. And we know that there'll be times where students might need to use them for dual credit classes and two-factor authentication for certain things. And so like that's where it was kind of a compromise. But the idea is that legislators feel that cell phones were negatively impacting students' learning. And so that's the heart behind it. So how do we get kids off of devices a little bit so they can get back to focusing on their education and some of the other skills that maybe are impacted by constant cell phone usage. So that's kind of where it was kind of brought by. It wasn't something the school was looking at necessarily doing on its own. It was just more we have to be compliant with our state laws because obviously they supersede anything we do.
Obviously, some schools in our district, around the district, just in the state, chose to go for a more stricter one, making them be in backpacks. I know some schools invested in those Yonder pouches. What made the school decide to go through the more lenient one, you being able to have it on you, just turned off?
Realistically, the Yonder, I mean, that's a huge cost. And in today's educational landscape, every dollar matters. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, you got to spend your dollars where it's going to help impact student learning. To me, spending money on a bag that's going to lock a student's phone, I don't know if that's the best way to spend a dollar. And it's more than that. They're pretty expensive in all reality. So I think with us, I think most of our kids are pretty responsible. I mean, just looking at the last couple of years, yeah, there's kids that their cell phone issues, don't get me wrong. But I think by and large, our kids do a pretty good job of during the classroom. So we wanted to look at, K through eight, they're already not allowed to use their phones. The only ones that were, and that was during passing periods or non-educational times, where our students allowed to do it. So really, it's just impacting 9 through 12, really our building more than anybody. But our board didn't think it was probably as big as a problem as others.
Yeah.
So we want to look at where our kids are at, what our community wants, and they kind of made that decision. And I think it's something that our kids have been really good with. And there's been a lot of positives that's come as a result already in the first week and a half, 2 weeks of school. So it's been, I'm sure it's difficult for some students at times, but I've seen a lot of positives already as well.
Obviously we're only about like a week and a half into the school year, but has the teachers and obviously the higher up seen the change that the state and the school wanted to see with this yet?
Yeah, I think so. As far as like cell phones, I mean, I go into classrooms and it's kids are engaged. They're not worried about their phones as much. They're not worried about what music to put on or what it might be. And I get it because I like to listen to music when I work too. So I get it. But sometimes it can take too much time to, search and get whatever it is, what playlist I want, whatever it might be. But the other aspect, I think that unintended, there's a couple actually. One, it's looking around at how much more social our kids have become. Kids having conversations and talking to each other, paying attention. And just it's really remarkable. Like when you go in a lunchroom and people are talking and they're not just face down in their phones. I think it's been a good thing for students just in general. Like I see a lot more smiles and I see a little less stress. I didn't grow up with social media. I can't sit here and say I can relate to everything because I can't, but I know my mood. If I get on social media too much and I get down that negative rabbit hole, it affects me. So watching kids interact or reading a book or the amount of card games that are going on is, I love it. I absolutely enjoy it, watching our kids interact more. And two, the hallways are clear with like a minute and a half left to go every passing period. It is unreal how much quicker you guys are getting to classes. So it's been neat to see some of those different things. While there's still some issues with it, but I think by and large, the positive impact I've seen on our students has been, I can't objectively measure it, but subjectively I can see it and say like, wow, I think it's working in a positive manner right now.
Is there any other school rules, small, minor, major, that changed for this school year that some people may not be aware of that you think are important?
The other thing I would say that we have adopted as a school is we went to a school-wide late policy. So every teacher now has to use the same late work policy. So that was no longer guessing from students. So we wanted to make that a little bit more student-friendly. In terms of, you don't have to guess what it is for math, English, science, social studies, our related arts, whatever it might be. Now it's kind of universal. So you can still receive up to 50% for up to 5 days or whenever the unit exam occurs to get work turned in and still get up to a 50% on whatever it is that you turn in. So if you have one of those days where you forget to turn something in, it's not like, oh, I'm not taking it. Now they still take it. Because the idea behind homework is we want you to learn and reinforce the concept we're dealing with. And sometimes I get it. Life happens. You're working, whatever. family events come up and sometimes things don't get turned in. But we feel, Mr. Rose and I feel very strongly that, you know, if a teacher is going to assign the homework, we want to make sure you get something for it. And here's our chance to, for you to still continue to get something for your efforts while still learning the content and not hammering your grade as bad.
Well, thank you so much for your time today. Stay tuned for two more segments of WEEM Weekly.
The programming on 91.7 WEEM is supported by Independent Federal Credit Union, located at 3737 South Scatterfield Road in Anderson. Their phone number is 765-649-9271, and they're online at fcu.org.
Welcome back to WEEM Weekly. My name is Emma Farley, and I am joined by
Elijah Watson
and Noah Johnson.
I'm interviewing you guys today about robotics, like competition, future, what you guys have in mind for robotics. So let's get started. What do you guys do? What are your positions? And could you give like a brief explanation about it?
Yeah, I'm the president of Robotics Club, and Noah's here is the vice president. And it's pretty simple. Usually Mr. Tripp has to step out for a few seconds or something, a minute or two, to be with students. So I and Noah will hold down the fort, kind of, and will really keep things under control. And if there is a situation that comes up, we usually will take care of it if Mr. Tripp is not there.
Okay. Is there anything you want to add on to that, Noah?
So with like us being the roles that we are trying to, like what he was saying, when the teacher's not there, try and look over all the students and whatnot, keep them in line, keep them in check, make sure they don't dilly-dally, because last year in robotics we had a lot of issues, and so this year we're trying to fix that issue and we want people to stay on task.
Okay, wonderful. Okay, on topic about last season, wasn't what you guys were hoping for? Was there some flaws, or was there some like golden trophies? What was it?
So no, we did not go to, I mean, we went to a competition, yes, but we were not able to make finals or anything huge. To any of that level, last year we had teams, and we can all take part of this because we're a team. We all took responsibility in the robot, and we were all dilly-dallying around. We didn't have a very good system of keeping everyone in control. Everyone was messing around, kind of thing. And so because of that, we had to this year kind of like step it up a little bit and make sure like people aren't messing around, keep things in check. Like with last season, though, we want to make sure last year we kind of messed up a little bit, and we're trying to make it better than we did last year.
Anything you want to add on, Elijah?
We didn't really have a completely functional robot last year, at least for me and Noah's team, but we didn't get last.
Okay. I mean, as long as you don't get last, I mean, that's the best. Could you guys give me a brief summary of what robotics is as a whole? Could you answer that, Elijah?
Yeah. Robotics as a whole, it's really about the problem solving skills and the ability to teamwork and to think quick on your feet. It's very focused on your ability to follow instructions, but also be creative without instructions, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that totally does. Anything you want to add?
Something I was going to add is also with like what Elijah was saying, it's a team-based thing. So a big part of it is knowing how to work with other people, even if it's not your style of working. And you just have to kind of learn how they like do their learning, like how they work on a robot. And so that way you can kind of talk with them and be like, hey, we can do this if you want to do that kind of thing. And so a lot about it is like team-based as well, knowing your teammates and knowing how to work with them.
Okay. So for the 2026 and 2027 of robotics, as the vice president and president, what are your guys' plans for this season with competition or planning for it, whatever?
Our plans are really to have a functional robot this year and to have fun. Like, it's always the goal is to have fun, but to also we're planning to go to two competitions this year, both at Purdue Polytech. And that's going to be a little bit of a step up and a challenge because we have a deadline.
Did you guys not do two last year?
We did one.
We only did one. But this year, we do have a bit more people coming into robotics, which is absolutely amazing. We would love more people to join us. And we're right now looking at three teams of four, probably around that or so. And we're looking at, like Elijah was saying, two competitions at Purdue Polytechnic in Anderson.
Okay. What do competition days look like?
It's an all-day thing. It's usually on Saturdays, and we go early in the morning, and then we get to the school late, very late, and even more so if we win trophies or if we compete in finals, sort of. It's very, very long day.
Yeah. All-day events. Like, yes, we do have lunch break, but it's just go, 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 because those competent, like these matches that they do, they're not going to stop unless something happens, of course, but they're going to keep going. So, like, you have to stay on your feet and, like, be listening to, like, when people are calling out teams to go out on the fields or calling you to, like, hey, be ready to go next kind of thing. And then, like, in between those times, so give you a little bit of time to see if there's any tinkering that you want to do, fix the robot up a little bit, maybe add some really quick adjustments to the robot, but you have to like stay on your feet like at all times, so there can't be a lot of dilly-dallying around.
Yeah, it's very stressful.
Okay, but would you say there's like some fun in that?
Yeah, I would say it is. It keeps you like focused on like everything that's going on, but at the same time, you also it's a team sport, so you are supporting each other, and I consider that being fun because everyone's supporting you driving or doing something else, you're all supporting your team, and like that's like the best part of it is being for each other.
Yeah.
Okay, at least we have some benefits about it. Are you guys confident for this season? With the very few practices that I've known about with you guys, you're like getting to know the people, are you guys confident? Because as you guys said, there's more people.
I would say I think we feel a bit more confident this year because I feel like this year we have a better setup than we did last year by a lot because like being there's more students, we want to make sure that we're more focused on stuff. But with everything that's going on, we are able to have a better system laid out for everyone doing the stuff and work on the robots. And because of that, that's going to make it a little bit easier on us, but it's also going to be better for the teams working on the robot as well.
Okay. What made you guys want to be president and vice president of this season? And what kind of made you, like, in the club, what, like, when did it click to you that, oh, I want to be this big part in robotics?
I've pretty much always been a natural leader, and I've been doing robotics even before I could do robotics. Like my mom used to be a like for VEX IQ, which is for elementary and our middle school. She used to be a coach for East, and she was doing it for many years. And so even as a little kid, I was like helping out, and I've always kind of been a natural leader, so.
Yeah, so something similar to, like, Elijah's been saying about like being a natural leader, I feel like it's not, I mean, yes, it's fun to take kind of take control of things, but at the same time, it's also good to make sure that people are staying on task and making sure they're focused on doing what they're supposed to be doing is, like, robotics. But at the same time, it's like, I've loved robotics for years. I've been in it for years. Short amount of time than Elijah has. And I know that there's definitely some leadership that should be taken in these type of roles because it is important to keep everyone on task even if something happens or not. And so because of that, I feel like leadership was like an important thing to me. Like I should be a role model for those around me.
I like how you guys describe that. What advice would you give to new people or people wanting to go into robotics?
Definitely go into it. It's very fun. It's very engaging and you'll learn a lot. There's a lot of principles to learn. And even though some might not be everyday principles, they're still really good to learn. Like gear ratio. It's very, very useful.
Like one of the big things for people coming in is that it's going to be a completely new environment. Like they're coming from a middle school, especially, and wanting to do robotics. It's going to be a completely different transition. It's more complicated. There's more stuff to go along with. However, it is super easy to get a hand of it. It goes basically by the same rules or stuff and whatnot like middle school it does. And so because of that, I hopefully it's an easy transition from middle school to high school. And for new kids coming in, I definitely recommend like join. But I mean, at the same time, it's also like, you know, this is a club that I meant to have fun. I mean, it's not like we're trying to stress you out by the vibes. We don't want to do any of that. This is just something fun to do that you can do. But at the same time, it also helps you improve with teamwork skills, communication skills, and you're like looking into going to job and involves like building, even like robots that we have around us today or technology. This is definitely a good club that you can go into to do that.
In the future, do you think robotics, like the community, the clubs, do you guys think it will be as strong as it is now?
I would think, if not stronger, I would think that more kids come into the school. I imagine there'll be more and more possible things that could happen. And so because of that, they're like, I want to get into robotics. I want to do this in robotics. I want to do that and that. And I feel like it would be a good opportunity for kids to join at any time. Like they can join any time they want. They just go through the process. And I mean, it's super fun. I mean, I think it's going to get more popular, if that's what you want to say, like in future years with robotics in the future.
Yeah.
You agree with him?
Yeah, it's a very developing time for robotics because if you didn't know, VEX and the program they were going through for robotics competitions, they broke off. So you have more people going and like choosing which side. And I think it's going to grow some popularity with one or the other and influence some people's choices about joining robotics.
Okay. So for people who want to join robotics, who should they contact for that information?
Probably contact Mr. Tripp or myself or Noah.
Hey, thank you for letting me interview you guys today. Again, my name's Emma Farley and I was joined by
Elijah Watson.
And Noah Johnson.
Okay. Stay tuned for another segment. We have one waiting that's very fun.
Programming on 91.7 WEEM is made possible through support by the Adam Custer Insurance Agency, American Family Insurance, Home, Auto, Life, Farm, and Commercial Insurance in Pendleton and Oak Landon. Their phone number is 765-221-2082.
My name is Trevor Martin, and I'm joined by the new U.S. history teacher here at Pendleton Heights High School, Mr. Evan McMillan. Evan, how are you doing today?
Doing good. Doing good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Doing well. Can't complain. All right. So you touched on it a little bit. You've started at the middle school now in your first year teaching at Pendleton Heights. What has this been like for you at the start of your season here?
The season has been a really good, fun start. You know, week one was a really, really thrilling game.
Oh, yeah.
Got the win. As the DB's coach, don't necessarily like to see the scoreboard be that high, but I'll take a win by one, you know, or a win by 50. You know, a win's a win. And just seeing the thing I got the most out of the first game was just the fight that we had. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, in the fourth quarter, we'd had the lead or tied for most of the game. And, you know, momentum swings their way and all of a sudden they're up 7 with the ball on their half.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when it's a game where we've given up points and we get the best defensive drive that we've had when we need it the most. Like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's what I've been telling them, like, the effort and energy and focus in that moment was awesome. And then on the teaching side, it's been a whole lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
I'm really enjoying being in the classroom right now and learning my students a little bit more, getting into, you know, the meat and bones of the content that I'm going. It's been good.
Yeah, that's great. Awesome. I know we talked about, again, that adjustment. What were some of those adjustments like over the summer to go from the middle school now to the high school?
There was a handful. A lot of talking with other teachers and, you know, studying on my own and you're watching videos of people that I think are pretty quality teachers or listening to different professional developments, stuff like that, but not putting it on the back burner and being, focused on getting better and knowing that, you know, I'm not just going to be able to walk into a new environment and you know, just magically be good. Like you got to put work in, just like my players got to put work in on the field and everyone has to put work in at their job, right? You're not just going to walk in and all of a sudden you're the best at what you do. So just realizing that and putting the effort in the summer and not just letting it slide by was huge.
Yeah. And I think something again, with balancing your time as a teacher and a coach as well, especially in the fall, I know you obviously coach baseball as well too. So it's in the spring as well, but how do you balance that time watching film, but also prepping for each class period you have?
It's very, very tough. But I've been able to manage it. I'm young, so I can, sleep a little bit less and drink a little bit more caffeine than maybe someone who's already mastered the art of balancing it. So right now I've got a little bit of a buffer, you know, because I'm younger, but man, it's tough. And making sure the hardest part is making sure that one area doesn't slip. Like I'm into teaching because I love teaching, right? I'm not just into teaching so I can go coach on the side, right? I love what I do here and making sure that my teaching doesn't slide just because I have to put more film in, right? Still focusing and putting the effort into being a very good teacher and getting the most for my students, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I told them, I've got a corny little thing that I say, but I got it from my college football coach, is give me your best shot. And your best shot's going to be different every day, but you just got to look yourself in the mirror and say, this is my 100% that I can give today. And I got to give that to my students and I've got to give that to my players and really demand the best out of myself with
it. Yeah, for sure. And you mentioned how you have a couple of football players in your class. What's it like for you to see them in the classroom, but then also translate that to the football field as well?
It's been good. It's been interesting to see them as learners. You kind of see the same tendencies and, sometimes you get them asking a little bit more football questions than content questions. So that's where I got to, you know, redirect them. Hey, we're in geography class right now. Let's focus on geography. We'll worry about if we're pro pads or if we're full pads later. Okay.
Right.
But seeing them in that instance and being able to push them and challenge them in two different ways is really cool. And like, showing them the importance of both sides, right? We're students first. And this is, you know, I believe that wholeheartedly. You know, I'm not teaching for no reason. I want them to see the value of education and figure out what they're wanting to do later on in life and not letting that slip and fall behind.
Right. And when did you first kind of realize, again, I know you said your degree is in elementary education, but you've taught at the middle school and now the high school. When did you first realize you wanted to become a teacher and teach this future generation of students?
Yeah, that came in my senior year of high school, really second semester. So kind of like right at the buzzer before I went to college. I was thinking I was wanting to be a pastor of some sort. And that idea kind of changed for reasons and reflection and decided to go into education. I think I'm good at like teaching parts. So it's just a different type of teaching.
Right, exactly.
To different people. But so that's really when that happened after some conversations with mentors who've done both teaching and pastoring and just a whole lot of different life experience and you know, just reflecting and figuring that out. And then I get to college thinking I'm going to be in elementary school for most of my life after that, and now I'm over here in the high school. But it's really, you never know what's going to happen.
Right, you're very right. What part of U.S. history, you kind of, again, mentioned a little bit earlier, but what part of U.S. history is your favorite to teach?
That's a tough one, man. there's a lot. I think I'm really excited to teach about the Cold War. Mm. It spans a long time, and there's a whole lot to it. I think that's why, like, the Cold War is not just like one singular event. There's so many dominoes that are in play. So I didn't teach it last year because it doesn't go that far at the middle school. And I'm really excited to teach like how all these dominoes are connecting, and when they fall, that's why this happens. I also love teaching about the Civil War. That's what I'm teaching right now. Okay. Starting off the school year with. So those are probably the two top ones.
Yeah, that makes sense. Why do you think it's important for students to know so much about, obviously, those specifically in two, but also just U.S. history as a whole? How important do you think it is for students to know that and use that knowledge to their advantage?
Yeah, actually, I did a little assignment at the beginning of the year. It was more of like an activity in class. And I told them, I got them in a group and I asked them the question, you know, why are you in this class? Why are you here? And I don't want a reason like, hey, it's a class that's mandatory to take. Yeah, like I want something deeper, right? There's a reason why we're teaching this. There's a reason why it's a curriculum. Why are you here? And like getting them to realize that there's more than just studying to take a test, and especially history, right? You know, people say a lot of the times, like, you know, history repeats itself and things like that, but like, really learning about where you come from, how this country has been brought up, and what individuals had to do to get it to where it is today, and giving people proper respect is a big one. But just knowing, like, man, the U.S. is awesome, and it's full of so many different cultures and so much rich history, and it doesn't have as deep of a history as some other, you know, countries, but man, it's so cool. And you get this blend of cultures, and I've got a blend of people in my classroom, and be like, man, you guys can all learn different parts of like where and how you, are you, and just giving respect to the past and the people, and learning that there's more than just studying to get a grade.
Exactly. It was kind of cool. Again, we're both Pendletonites, class of 2021 graduates and classmates. But yeah, friends for a long time too. This interview is pretty cool. But what does it mean for you to, again, be teaching back at the same high school that you went to?
It is awesome. I love Pendleton. And I mean, if I didn't, I wouldn't have came back here. And I actually had a job at Noblesville before I even graduated college, and a job opened up at Pendleton, and you know, I put my name in there and got it. And I was getting called back to here, and I just have a heart for the community. I didn't really, you know, graduate high school or college and say that like I have to go back to this area, right? I'm wherever I go.
And
it just so happened that things lined up, and I think things lined up for a reason. And so I, you know, took the job here, and it's cool. Teaching some of my friends' siblings.
Yes,
and,
yeah, I'm sure that's cool.
So getting to see them from when Rosie Casas, I have her in class, and I played baseball and been friends with Arturo and his family for a long time. So seeing when she was, you know, little, when me and Arturo were playing baseball, and now she's in my class, it's awesome. And, you know, there's a next generation here at Pendleton that I want to succeed and find what they want to do in life. And they go out wherever they need to go, or if they come back here and do the same thing, but just trying to give students the chance to figure out who they are and just be a helpful piece along the way.
That's awesome. All right, we'll get you out of here on this question, but I just kind of want to, you touched on a few different things here, but I wanted to kind of wrap it up by saying, what do you enjoy the most about teaching as a history teacher?
Man, I love being passionate about what I'm talking about. And not just looking at, you know, not just teaching something because it happened in history, but teaching it because I love just history in general, and I can be nerdy and I can be my, you know, I got chills talking about a Lincoln quote in class, and I'm telling the class, hey, I got chills. I got,
yeah.
Like, this means something to me. I love it. And and they see someone that's passionate about it. And I think if you see passion from somebody, that you're going to learn better from them, even if you don't like the subject, right? If you see someone cares, like my favorite class I took in college, it wasn't even related to my major. The professor was almost to tears at some points talking about stuff because of how passionate he was about it. And I was like, man, I'm getting so much more out of this class than I thought. So, my favorite part is just being myself and going all out and bringing energy to the classroom, even when it's in the morning and nobody talks. So I come back in the classroom and I reset, and I don't know. It's just, I get to be myself and talk about stuff that I love.
Right. And that's awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Evan. This is a great interview.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks.
All right. Perfect.